Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy it. Today we have part one of a two-part presentation of the story of the groundbreaking Columbia River Highway and Crown Point. Part two will come in tomorrow's episode. The article it's drawn from was first published on July 21st of 2024 under the headline Scenic Gorge Highway Set the Tone for Oregon Roads. Here we go. Vogons are really bad poets. Everyone who's ever read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy knows this about Vogons. And if that includes you, those who have read The Hitchhiker's Guide, well, just mix yourself a pangalactic gargle blaster and sit back while I fill in the uninitiated on the Vogons. In The Hitchhiker's Guide, the Vogons are a race of corpulent, green-tinted humanoid aliens who are like the worst kind of highway department bureaucrats. At the beginning of the book, the Vogons are preparing to blow up the Earth to make way for a construction of a new hyperspace express route. According to the book, they are callous, unimaginative, and officious, but the most important piece of advice The Hitchhiker's Guide gives about Vogons is, on no account should you allow a Vogon to read poetry at you. Vogons love to write poetry and to share it whenever they can, but they are so very bad at it that their poems can inflict actual physical injury. It's a clever way to play with the idea that highway engineers, and engineers in general, often seem not to have much of a sense of aesthetics. Except, of course, that just isn't true. Engineers just don't usually get the opportunity to bring their appreciation of scenic beauty or graceful forms and artistic touches to their work. Engineers make stuff that gets a job done. Paying extra money to make it prettier usually just doesn't make sense. But every now and then, you run into an engineer with a vision that marries great aesthetics with top-tier engineering and figures out how to make it all make better financial sense than a plain, cheap job. We spent some time exploring the life and times of one such engineer in a recent Offbeat Oregon column, Condi McCullough, author of the string of magnificent bridges that adorn the Oregon Coast Highway. In that article, I mentioned that McCullough was probably attracted to the state by another engineer, Samuel Lancaster, and by Oregon's receptiveness to him and his vision as he built the Columbia River Scenic Highway. So let's talk about him now, because most likely if he hadn't come to Oregon and built that highway, McCullough wouldn't have come here either, and Oregon would probably look a lot different today. Different and most likely not better. Samuel Lancaster was born in Mississippi in 1864 and got into road engineering in 1881. Like a lot of professionals back then, he didn't have a formal credential. He took a few engineering classes at Union University and jumped straight into a job on a local railroad and learned the trade on the job. By the time he showed up in Seattle around 1906 or 1907, he was a popular and well-known evangelist for the Good Roads Movement, which had been started by the League of American Wheelmen. That would be bicycle riders. Remember, really early bicycles looked like a man perched on top of a big giant wheel, the old penny farthing types. That had been a decade or so before, so the mid-1890s. Lancaster was in Seattle now because his good friend Samuel Hill, a fellow Good Roads activist and a wealthy railroad executive to boot, had recruited him to help Seattle beat Portland in the rivalry between the two West Coast port cities. Portland had just had its Lewis and Clark Exposition in 1905, and it had been a huge success, a commercial fantasy city based on a picturesque little lake. We had an Offbeat Oregon History article about that, too. You can find it with a search pretty easily. But Portland had built those fairgrounds on leased land, and after the event they'd had to tear everything down. Despite the urging of Frederick Law Olmsted, the legendary designer of New York's Central Park, it was not made into a park, and within a year or two a colorful mining engineer from Colorado named Leif Pence was working on filling the lake up with dirt so that he could sell lots for warehouses. There's an Offbeat Oregon article on that scheme, too. The leaders in Seattle had watched this whole thing. The big boost in tourism and municipal marketing, the wasted potential for a legacy park feature that would have attracted visitors and tourists for decades afterwards, and they were determined not to make the same mistake when their turn came. And their turn was coming in 1909, when the Alaska and Yukon Pacific Exposition was scheduled. So, at Hill's urging, they hired Lancaster as well as Olmsted's son, John Olmsted, to design and create an elaborate network of scenic parks and boulevards to spruce up their city. It was a huge success, of course. The economic benefits that Seattle reaped were big, measurable, and, unlike Portland's, lasting. Portland leaders could now see very clearly what a big opportunity they had missed by being so short-sighted with their expo. Then Washington hired Lancaster to design a system of access roads in Mount Rainier National Park, which are still legendary today, following Lancaster's aesthetic goal of bringing visitors to beautiful scenery with roads and bridges that fit into and enhance that scenery. By this time, Lancaster had a strong reputation as that rare creature, an engineer artist. A Vogon poet, if you will. His projects made money because they attracted people to see them. Meanwhile, Portland's civic leaders and prominent citizens like Simon Benson and John Yeon were anxious to get even with Seattle with an even bigger and more spectacular road and parks project. So when railroad executive Samuel Hill and engineer Samuel Lancaster approached them to pitch a highway through the Columbia River Gorge that blended first-class engineering with magnificent scenery-enhancing aesthetics, they got pretty excited. We'll talk about how the city responded to that pitch and what the result was tomorrow in part two of this presentation of the Columbia River Scenic Highway story. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Say, are you an audiobook listener? And do you enjoy old pre-war pulp stories like Tarzan of the Apes and Conan the Barbarian and The Call of Cthulhu and stuff like that? Or do you like early Victorian penny dreadful fiction like Sweeney Todd and Varney the Vampire and Highwayman Dick Turpin? If so, you might enjoy the audiobooks I have out there in the world. The easiest way to find them is for the search for my name on audible.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.